Welcome to Sample Size Podcast. My name is Noelle, and I'm here with my co-host Tone.
That's me.
And we're your one-size-fits-all podcast for fashion and creative culture. On today's episode, we're back after a long New York Fashion Week and an even longer VMAs and Met Gala. After we play catch-up and do a little housekeeping, we're going to take a deep dive into the acceleration of fashion cycles, an attempt to get to the bottom of who's really responsible for the negative impacts of fast fashion. Then, we turn our magnifying glass back to New York Fashion Week and discuss if super speedy trend cycles are impacting designers' desirability. Make sure you leave a rating and review, and don't forget, it's not that serious, it's just clothes.
And we're back. Hey, 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 Noelle. Long time no speaky.
It's been 3 months. Without recording, you still have the same intro.
Man, we've been so busy, I couldn't even think about anything else to say to lead it. I mean, I just went with what felt natural, and that just felt natural.
Yeah.
It's been a while, man. It really has, because I was thinking on the way here, I was like, damn, we really about to talk into microphones again?
Yeah, it's been, what, 3 or 4 weeks since episode 15?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think like...
Dang.
Yeah. And by the time they hear it, it's going to be like a month, right?
Yeah. This is the biggest break we've taken so far.
Yeah. And it's not going to be the biggest. So,
before we get into changes, the growth, the evolution, how is your personal life going?
How is my personal life going? Let's say this week last week when you guys hear this, it took a turn for good in terms of like just me being able to like aha moment in terms of like getting ready. Like, I don't know, getting my schedule down and just, you know, trying to be productive with the multiple hats I wear. Yeah. So let's just focus on the positives. Of course, there were negatives. I am still working too much. But, you know, hopefully, you know, when it comes, I get paid enough. But yeah. So how about you? How you been?
I've been good. I feel like I've been on like an adrenaline high because of everything that's been going on with Fashion Week and just everything we're doing with the brand. And then like. Work stuff is ramping up in terms of like managerial responsibilities. So I didn't realize like how tired I was during the week because I was like happy and just go, 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 go. But now I'm like, I could sleep for a couple of days straight.
Yeah, we probably should have slept for a couple of days straight.
Yeah, probably. I'm going to do after this episode comes out, I'm not going to be reachable for like a week or two.
I'm as pooped. You shouldn't be because we did a lot of work, especially you and Jaden both. And we'll talk about a little bit about that. But it's just been like, it's just a lot that we did. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was a high and to think we didn't even make clothes ourselves. We just try to cover the clothes.
Right. So like we didn't even do anything labor intensive. Like nothing for real difficult. Like we're just dipping our toes in it, and it's like, damn. I understand why people be exhausted, but grateful always.
Yeah, everything. Definitely was a humbling experience.
Yeah,
First experience being part of it in terms of like you know participating and covering it.
Yeah.
But yeah, can't wait for the next one, honestly, just because we learned so much and, you know.
It's only going to get better.
Yeah. So then how do you want to start in terms, you want to talk about our rebrand or?
Yeah. So I'm sure if you're listening to this, you have noticed we've done a little upgrade, a little switcheroonie. Now all of our social media and website will reflect that we are Sample Size Media now.
Whoa, media? What?
We are.
That sounds official. I'm not going to hold you.
It is official. Wow, we have the documents and all. Yeah. So, like, I mean, we've been doing more than just the podcast, but we just wanted to kind of officially label it and then officially announce Bestie of the Pod, Jaden, has been.
Jaden, yes.
Has been promoted to social lead of Sample Size Media.
Yeah. I mean,
no raise.
No, let's not.
Only extra duties. Let's not talk about this.
He's going to start talking about you and your shit. We don't want that. We don't want no bootstrap operation.
But yeah.
Yes, please.
Jaden is social lead. You know, he's going to be contributing. I mean, as you can tell, like, he's been killing New York Fashion Week coverage.
Out the park.
Like, what? A brain.
What a brain.
What a genius.
And just, yeah. I just want to take the time to just big up Jaden, big up you, because the amount of work that these two put in during New York Fashion Week is I can't even convey via this podcast.
That's my bestie for real.
Yeah. you know, I low-key miss your 8 a.m. text about what we're going to be doing for the day.
Oh, my God. Because,
you know, I don't get good morning text, so that was like
I'm going to get back to that because I love a list. I love a list.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, at least I know what I got to do this morning. And, yeah, so definitely was a lot.
Yes.
So, what was your favorite part? Let's talk about that for a little bit, that week of that experience,
Honestly, I loved our branding before, and I think it was very very representative of where we were at that time. But now I feel like we're three very ambitious people. We know what we want.
Right.
We're dedicated to getting that, and I feel like our website and our logo and our social media presence reflects that. And I cannot wait, because we have more plans to roll out in the future.
Yep.
I'm not going to drop too much info, but definitely, you know, keep your eyes out on the YouTube channel. Keep your eyes out on the website. If you love Jaden's reviews, please keep your eyes out for the website, because
and we'll definitely be engage with it. If you like it, like a post, share the post, share it to your favorite fashion critique.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, we are putting this work and we hope that you are using it and enjoying it.
Feedback is super important.
And appreciate it.
Yeah. So that's that on that, on updates on Sample Size Media. You can find us on all of our social medias. We have Sample Size Media on everything except our email, which I just remembered.
Yeah.
But we will fix that. So busy week and a half. Not for just us, but for fashion in general.
For fashion in general.
I would say possibly the most hectic fashion week.
Yeah.
In a minute.
It went from fashion week to Met Gala to VMAs to Met Gala. It was just a lot, man.
All within the span of 3 days.
Too much.
So we, we covered all these events on our social media, so we're not going to get super, super deep into them. But just to run down, I'm going to ask you, what are your best and worst collections from New York Fashion Week, and then your best and worst looks from the Met Gala and the VMAs?
So I put some thought into this. Fashion Week was so hectic that it's like, you know, maybe I didn't appreciate it as I should have. So I had to go back and okay, we did all this work. And I was like, oh, what did I really enjoy? And to me, they were I think two definitely that stand out. I think my total list was three, but I'll have to say first and foremost, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to pull up my list
take your time.
Where you at? Sorry.
I'm gonna do my best and worst now, because I have mine for Fashion Week.
Yeah, go
off
ahead.
The top
give
of
me.
The dump.
So we don't.
So best for me was either Peter Doe or Lore. Luar, L-U-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
First, Peter Doe, because he is he has such a refined eye, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's refined eye, clothes that you actually want to wear, brought in his Asian heritage. I'm pretty sure he's Vietnamese. Please, I will self-correct if that is incorrect, but he brought in culture aspects of Vietnamese attire. I think that was really sleek and awesome. And then Luar is just oh yeah, I know that girl. You look at that collection and that is a girl from New York. She has a good job. You know, she probably knows some DJs. She probably does some fun drugs, but she has a good job. Love Luar so much. I think it was very in tune with what girls want to wear nowadays. And the best part about New York Fashion Week as a whole, I think, is a lot of the clothes were actually wearable. Mm-hmm, which is enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very enjoyable.
Yeah, I think it was wearable, but in elevated ways. Worst collection, Christian Cohen, I think, because mm-hmm. it was just a Christopher John Rogers ripoff, and that was really upsetting to see. Not upsetting to say. I was like, come on, do better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought Laquan Smith was okay.
Okay. Yeah. So about my best and worst, I agree with Peter Doe. That was on my list as best. Mm-hmm. Just because of, you know me, I'm minimalist. Mm-hmm. So I just like the appreciation to detail in terms of what looked things you wear in a business essence, like a business, yeah. You know,
CB Philo print.
Yeah, like you might not be you might not be necessarily doing high business, but you know you came into the city to show that you did business. On my list as well is who decides war.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, there was more street style looks, and you know I'm a street style person.
Yeah.
That's something that I realized, and like, yeah, that's definitely me, because funny, like sharing a little bit of my experience in New York Fashion Week, I went to Spring Studios because, you know, you guys know I'm a photographer, and I wanted to take pictures of street styles and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got there, I was like, oh, wow. Everybody was just giving looks, right?
So it's Fashion Week.
I know. So I'm like, I don't know.
I would hope so.
I know, but it was just like, you know, it's one thing to have, especially since like the pandemic, everything is just social and online.
Oh yeah, niggas is ready.
And then in person, it's like, damn, people were putting on looks for real.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, okay, I'm looking at people, I'm people watching. I'm like, damn, this shit is, niggas is putting it on. But I'm realizing like certain things is just like, yeah, it's nice, but it's not me.
Yep.
It's just like, I was like, oh, because like I didn't put on anything crazy, but I attempted to put on something that was a little bit outside of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then when I got there, I was like, oh no, that's not me.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't have to be like your comfort zone. If you step out in something that feels like, you know what, I'm trying something new, I'm pushing our personal boundary. Like, you don't have to be the craziest bitch on the block as long as you feel
but it just
accomplished something.
I just
didn't
feel
look.
Comfortable in the sense like sometimes I feel comfortable when I'm uncomfortable, if that makes sense. I know it doesn't make the like clearest sense, but like I know that, okay, this is not me usually, but I'm confident in what I'm doing, like what I'm presenting. That's not me usually.
I'm confident knowing I'm trying something new.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So then when I had my outfit on, it was like, oh, like I was just like, I guess maybe critiquing myself and whatnot, but it was just that. So yeah. And then and then last to round out my top was the Kim Shu. Because I liked it because it was like it draw from like cowboy western history, and it was like more like, you
also
know, this
Asian perspective.
Yeah, and then it's like the Y2K ish vibes. So I was like, oh, I really like this collection. So that was really my standout. And then in terms of what I didn't like, I agree that I thought Laquan Smith was kind of it wasn't giving what it was supposed to give or whatnot. And then
Laquan
it
Smith
was, but
collection.
For me, just and hopefully nobody's gonna attack me because I know like his name is valuable in the streets or whatnot. But I didn't like the Tom Ford collection.
No, me neither.
Yeah, okay, cool.
I didn't either.
I was like, I hope people are not about to fight me for this.
No, and I saw like generally positive, some mixed reviews about it, but I was like, I don't like this.
I didn't like. Yeah,
it was bright and tacky and
that's
glittery.
Exactly. I was like, what?
But
I would say the one thing I did like from that was like the men's suits. That was the gift.
Okay.
But
yeah,
other than
Tom Ford is good for a suit.
Yeah, but I was like, oh no, it was like
not 100% agree.
Yeah, it looked
not.
Like you're trying to be like arson crafty, but it wasn't like, I guess, high fashion or fashion to me. And I hope I'm not offending anybody that is a fan of Tom Ford. But yeah, oh well. This is just my opinion. So yeah, those are my tops and my favorite looks from
also,
New York
we
Fashion.
We have to shout out Thea Philo.
Yeah, oh yeah,
and the
Thea
whole
Philo
team.
Was on my list as well.
I think that was the most impactful show.
Yeah.
Of Fashion Week. I feel like that is a show that we are going to be talking about for a while. So shout out to that entire team. Shout out to Sydney for working your first New York Fashion Week. Love you, girl.
Shout out to Sydney.
Okay, quickly, Met Gala and VMAs, best and worst, VMAs first.
VMAs, I don't know. I didn't feel any particular way about anybody if I'm being...
I don't remember.
That's my thing. It's just
I remember Chloe Bailey wore that Marnie dress, the silver tinfoil dress with the spoon.
Yeah, it's just... And I,
and
didn't
I
like
was
that.
Waiting... I was giving her... You know, I was waiting for the explanation. I was like, nah, she thinking, she big brain. And then she was on Instagram like, oh, I wore a spoon on my dress because I was about to eat.
Oh,
girl,
that was the explanation.
Girliana. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the whole backdrop of it being like, I mean, Atlantic Ave in the background.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know. Just the VMAs
where
was just
is
under,
the backdrop?
It was just underwhelming for me this year. It's just like we could have kept this virtual, to be honest.
Yeah. So I don't recall anything from VMAs. Best and worst from Met Gala. The theme was America Lexicon of Fashion.
Clearly nobody knew the theme. Let's just start there.
I think people understood
some people,
the theme. I think we focused on all the people who did not, like we do every year, but there were people who knocked it out the park.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
Nikki Tutorials. I like
Nikki Tutorials and her tribute to Marsha P. Johnson, I thought was very well thought out and respectful. Love that. I liked, and I'm praying I'm saying her name right, she's a Native American model named Quanah Rose, mm-hmm. wearing Dundas, mm-hmm. wearing the traditional Native American turquoise jewelry. I think she looked like an ethereal goddess and was honestly the only person who like really punched it in for me.
Mm-hmm.
Also Rihanna, I don't understand how people did not understand the references.
I guess because people are just used to Rihanna being elaborate. Even in people's critiques of the show, they didn't realize the theme of the show. So it's just like,
right. Like, so, no, I saw a lot of takes that were like, what does this have to do with American fashion?
Yeah, that's what
and
I'm
I was like, are puffer jackets not a staple of American jackets? Are the flapper accessories not indignant of the Harlem Renaissance? The silhouette is like a traditional silhouette as well. Yeah, you know, Dima is not from America or whatever, but like, how do you not see the references? I don't know. I think people expected her in something sexy, or people expected a reveal out of it, but it's like, no, like once it was explained, it became elevated. Also tops. Oh, Sierra in the Dundas
football
dress.
That's how I want people to be head ass about
it. Yeah, with her husband's championship ring.
With the trophy, with the jersey dress
what
and everything.
Moment.
It was just like, I was like, yeah.
To me.
And what's more American than American football, right?
Yeah.
So like, it definitely was a
And
a
that
there,
that also has historical references, like fashion references as well, in the jersey dresses. So. Yeah. Amazing.
And of course, we wouldn't be sample size if we didn't shout out our boy Kirby and his bulletproof vest of a suit. You didn't like it? Oh,
I liked it. He looked great, obviously, like it wasn't like a gag.
No, yeah, I just wanted to shout it out.
Yeah,
that's what
he
we
looked
do.
Great as per usual. Bad looks.
I try to stay away from being negative, but I mean, I wouldn't say. No, I'm just going to keep that opinion to myself. I know when to shut up sometimes.
Oh, okay.
How about you?
I will say, I don't think it's a bad look. I didn't really enjoy Lil Nas X's Versace Transformers situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we just saw that same performance from Lady Gaga last year. I think she was wearing Christian Cohen, where she had like the big gown into a little cocktail dress, into a little bikini situation. And like, we just saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he looked handsome. It was just, underwhelmed.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean, yeah. But, you know, Lil Nas, he's getting into his fashion bag as well because he's trying to be like this mega star, if he isn't already. But, yeah. So, I'm interested to see his interpretations for all these, like, high fashion events.
Yeah.
Because I know that, you know, his team, they always tend to lean towards being a spectacle. Because
I think he's, like, has a contract. I think he might be, like, a Versace ambassador. I'm not sure. But he tends to always wear Versace on, like, big main events, red carpets, which, okay, we gotta some variety. Some variety.
I mean, if you get paid for it, I believe it. So yeah, no problem. And then just to round it out too, one look that I didn't like, and I was cracking up because somebody gonna call her, she looked like Grabo online, but Jennifer Lopez, her, you know, little cowboy ass.
Oh,
Django,
DJ-Lo Unchained.
Yeah.
She was wearing what, Ralph Lauren, I think?
I'm not sure on the designer, but yeah, I don't know. It's just, like, I see what she was going for, but it just wasn't it for me.
I see what she was going for. I think it did wander into costume a little bit.
I
think
Django.
It was a
situation.
Did J-Lo?
Yo, people be so funny on the internet, man.
I appreciate the intent of going for a theme, but I think it was over-accessorized, and that made it look like, girl, are you a ranch hand for real? Like, either the hat or the belt had to go, but.
Yeah. All right, yeah, so that rounds up our little quick recap of Fashion Week and Met Gala and the VMAs.
Oosa.
So, Miss Noel, what is going to be our topic today?
Yes. Okay, so today is kind of a continuation of the Shein episode. We got really, really great reception on that. So we kind of wanted to play off that, but kind of take it in a new direction. Right. So what we're going to do today is talk about fast fashion and trend cycles.
The fastest in the world.
Yeah. Let me give you a little basic definition of what a trend cycle is. So basically, it's just the time period in which like a popular style or aesthetic goes through the phases of intro, the rise, the peak, the decline, and then boom, outdated.
Right.
So a micro trend is something that usually happens really quickly. So typically a micro trend will happen between 3 to 5 years. And this is the measurement for when these terms were coined in the 2000s. And a macro trend typically is 5 to 10 years. And those are kind of like the styles and aesthetics that we define decades by.
So like Y2K?
Yeah, so like Y2K, flare pants in the 70s, hippie aesthetic, drop waist in the 20s, shoulder pads in the 80s. So like just era defining trends. Obviously, you know, if you are a consumer of clothing, you don't even have to be a consumer of fashion. You know that trend cycles nowadays do not last 5 to 10 months or even 3 to 5 years.
Nowhere no how.
Yeah.
If you don't know what's up now, you already passed.
Right. If you blink twice, then you missed it, essentially, is what we're working with.
Yeah.
So we're gonna get into how trend cycles became fast fashion cycles, and how the intensification and speedification, I know that's not a word, but we're gonna roll with it.
I mean, I heard that word before in dictionary, so I believe it.
Speedification, yeah, it's definitely in dictionary.
No, that was an SAT word. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, don't ask me to spell it though. But we're gonna get into how that also creates overconsumption, how that affects the environment, and how that affects designers and high end,
because
they are not exempt
at all.
So some basic stats on how trend cycles became fast fashion cycles. Not going to give you a lecture. We're going to get through this asapually to get to the juicy stuff. But first, I want to ask you a question.
Of course, I'm ready.
What company is credited with starting the first fast fashion business cycle?
H&M is my answer. Either H&M or Zara. Zara?
Oh, you got it. It's Zara. Yeah. It's Zara. Okay. Half point. Did you see that? No, because I took the questions off. Yeah, okay. You're right. Okay. You got that.
So just to cue you guys in, we usually make an episode outline for all the questions and stuff. So sometimes I'm prepped, but she took the questions this time.
We're keeping you
so
dumb and funny today.
I have no
stupid
idea.
Stupid and funny.
What the questions is. So if I embarrass myself, blame Noelle.
That's your role. You got to be the fall guy. I'm so sorry.
I'll do my role. Don't worry. I'll enjoy it.
So you are correct.
Amen.
So in the 90s, because of rising levels of globalization and offshore manufacturing, the actual parent company is called Inditex, and it is the parent company of Zara. You know, Zara is a Spanish company. It's not an American company.
Yeah.
So essentially what Zara...
I'm sorry. Them sizes is definitely European.
Oh, right. I was going to say. Them sizes is not American, baby. That's why I can only buy dresses. Can't buy tops. Can't buy bottoms. Got to buy dresses from Zara.
I can't buy anything from Zara.
That's
anymore.
It. I can buy a headband. So Zara abandoned the concept of like a fashion season in order to start doing like year-long cycles of production. So that's introducing customers to new items every few weeks as opposed to having to wait like quarterly.
I'm trying to think if I don't think like in my life cycle as a person I never experienced like outside of like high fashion to having to wait for like a new like season get new looks and stuff.
I mean, people weren't so they're waiting, but like also people used to sew more, people used to go to tailors more, people used to dye stuff more, so they're able to like work with and customize the stuff they already have to hold them over.
Oh, okay.
So
I see.
This catches on huge, obviously. And like you said, also catches on with H&M and Forever 21, which I think is interesting because, like, we consider Zara, H&M, and Forever 21, like, the old, like, go-tos. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you first started buying clothes, those were always, like, go to my Forever 21, my H&M, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so after basically everyone started copying Zara, most of the retailers started going overseas with their manufacturing processes, and we got all into this into the Shein episode if you want to get into a full detailed explanation of how these motherfuckers are cheating, lying, and scamming. You know, there's little to no labor laws, and wages are extremely low, and hours are extremely long, and they also do not have child labor laws, which companies took advantage of. And then, boom, towards the tail end of the 2010s, we have ultra-fast fashion. So that is your Sheins, your Fashion Novas, your Boohoos, and your, unfortunately, my love, ASOS. ASOS. Stand behind me, ASOS. When the revolution comes, that's all right. I'll protect you.
Don't worry.
Okay, so we understand the business background. But now we have to add social media and overconsumption to the mix.
Social media. Okay.
So before we get into that.
Another question?
Another pop quiz.
Oh, no.
Do you know, and I don't think you're going to get this one.
Oh, now I'm locked in. I love when people doubt me.
Do you know what chewy means?
Oh, fuck. Spell it for me. Can I get a?
C-H-E. U-G-Y. Chungi.
Chungi. Use it in a sentence for me.
We're
going to use a spelling bee style. Come on.
Oh.
What is
I got one. So, skinny leg jeans are so chungi. No one even wears those anymore.
No. What the fuck?
Okay. This tickles worse. Me. And I knew you weren't going to know it because I know you're not a TikTok girl.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is so what they say to TikTok?
It's very popular on TikTok, particularly Transplant New York TikTok. Wannabe fashion influencer TikTok. You got to get into that.
What?
You got to get into
okay,
the tea.
Okay, please school me on this.
So, chungi essentially means the opposite of trendy. So things you would find stylish in a Caucasian middle school and high school, but are no longer in style. So like chevron prints, Uggs, skinny leg jeans, Abercrombie. It's just a word that's used when someone still follows like out of date trends. You know, this includes like fashion, habits on social media, use of slang, basically like the overly enthusiastic high school person who like, oh, you're not from Jersey, so you're not gonna understand this reference. Mm-hmm. But like in Jersey in high school, it was a flex to like go to New York and like, I don't know, take pictures on the subway and like Central Park and pretend like, oh, I'm so edgy and cool. That's chungi. If you took that person and put them in 2021, chungi. All
right.
White person from the Midwest living in Bushwick, chungi.
Oh, wow. I'm not going to hold you. This just made me feel like older than I am. I know I'm young, but.
No, it'd be people our age using it too.
Really? I have never.
And you know what's crazy? It's, okay. It's literally transplant on transplant violence. Because it's always like white New York City transplants calling another white New York City transplant chungi. And it's like, both of y'all got main license plates. Like, both of y'all have IDs from Wisconsin, okay? Let's be realistic. Like, nobody's given authentic here.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this is a word that's thrown around on TikTok to describe what is out of style. And, I mean,
I feel like that sounds like a slur. I'm sorry.
It is a slur. Because if somebody says that to me, I'm fighting. You get your ass
whooped. Like, what you call me?
Right. That is a hate crime, first of all.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, so.
Oh, wow. Go ahead.
Obviously, TikTok is notorious for accelerating trend cycles, particularly because for some reason, Shein just has a grip on that app.
Mm.
But we're going to break down how exactly these algorithms are essentially fucking up the environment.
Yeah, please go get into it.
So as you know, to draw in a bunch of viewers and followers, creators have to cleverly oversaturate people's feeds with new and upcoming trends, right?
Right.
And unfortunately for a lot of, let me not say fashion influencers, let me say style influencers and lifestyle influencers, the priority is based on who breaks a style first versus how you as an individual wears it.
Okay.
So because like the algorithm rewards newness and quickness over quality.
So then, and
so
I'm just trying to like think about it a little bit. So then are these social media creators trying to create styles then? It's not, are they like, where are they pulling these styles from? Is it because,
well, the only companies that can keep up with increasingly fast fashion trends and style trends are fast fashion companies. So while influencers are in competition with their peers to popularize or, you know, put their stamp on the next big trend, fast fashion brands are the only ones who can mass produce items quickly and cheaply enough to keep up.
Okay, I'm starting to see the picture.
Yeah. So, as you can tell, like, I totally should have got her name, but there is this really great stylist and content creator who does like video essays. Mm-hmm. So she has this amazing video. I think it's called Shein is Kind of Bad for the Environment, or like TikTok is Kind of Bad for the Environment, mm-hmm. where she breaks down like, you know, those $1,000 Shein trends and what we discussed in episode one. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add her name into the show notes, mm-hmm. because it really is a great breakdown of how social media correlates to overconsumption. And I'm sure you fell victim to this before.
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah. I have.
I know.
Because I'd be looking at, maybe, how would I rock that? But it's not more so, luckily I'm not on TikTok as I should be, but it's IG and I'm trying to stay away from it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, okay, I follow some style pages and, you know, I'm into street style. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't quote unquote copy, but it's like, okay, I can see what they were going for and I build from that.
I feel like with people who, so with like street style and like footwear, I feel like it might be a little bit easier to skirt this impact,
yeah.
because new shoes aren't dropping as fast as like new trends are, yeah, or like,
even if the new shoes are dropping, fucking bots are getting them.
Yeah, exactly. So it is kind of a little bit of a different lane. But mm-hmm. If you follow any like lifestyle content creators, beauty content creators, style content creators, it is literally just a race to see who can purchase the next Shein drop quickest,
yeah,
getting sent it to them quickest, and it's never ending.
Yeah, I be seeing those like $5,000 Shein hots, like
it's insane.
Like how you spend
for five? Do you know you could build such a quality
closet.
Wardrobe?
Oh my god,
with $5,000.
Yeah,
and I, you know, I'm a victim to this as well. I clean out my closet quarterly, and I always tell myself, oh, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to sell my clothes on Depop. And then I end up with a pile of $7 Fashion Nova tube tops. Who's going to buy this on Depop?
For me, when I'm refreshing my wardrobe, I just go the donation route. I know.
Yep, that's what I end up doing with
yeah,
the clothes.
Yeah, because like, I don't want to deal with like thrift stores and having to haggle. And like they're giving me like $2 on credit. So it's just like, I just like, okay, let me, at least I convince myself I'm doing the world a better thing by just donating the clothes, even though Salvation Army is a different thing, but like, we're talking about that differently. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. So we kind of, now we have overconsumption in the mix. And obviously, what is happening with these clothes? You know, we're not reselling them. They are going to thrift stores, which on TikTok, you'll see a lot of videos of people seeing like things that just trended a month ago in the thrift store. That is a huge issue for the environment. If like something that was a massive trend 30 days ago is now considered discarded,
that's sick.
Obviously is a huge issue for the environment and all of the resources. So we're going to get into the positive and negative impact.
And I'm sorry, just really real quick. And then the thing with that too is like how many times have you kept something in your closet that you haven't worn for a while?
Yeah.
But then it's just like one time it's like, oh, this is the perfect thing for what I was looking for. Like,
so I you only don't do get that with higher end clothes.
Exactly. You don't get to experience that euphoria if you were like just buying things and just throwing away, right? Because I don't know. I feel as though that is a big win for me when it's like, oh, I haven't worn this in X amount of years or days. And it's like, oh, but
it feels like an accomplishment when you're doing it with quality clothing.
Exactly.
For sure.
So it's just like, damn.
Yeah.
They're losing the recipe.
And I'm good for like, I'll buy this like vintage expensive piece. Or I'll buy this archive piece when it fits. Meanwhile, it's 10 sizes too small.
I don't even want to talk about
been in my closet.
I got a whole bin of things that I haven't worn yet. It's just like, oh, I need to make, I'm going to wait till I can fit it.
I have three, four. My archives have archives, essentially.
My archives have archives. Yeah, just like me.
It's bad. Positive, negative impacts. I'm going to start out with the positive impacts of fast fashion and trend cycles. I'm going to say that out loud right now.
What is this? It sounds like an oxymoron.
All right. So now, positive and negative impacts of fast fashion.
Positive things about of fast fashion?
We got to play a little bit of devil's advocate. It would not be an episode of Sample Schmodcast
if we didn't say devil's advocate.
If we did not play devil's advocate a little bit. Okay. So, and you can tell me if you agree or not.
Oh, I'm going to tell you. Don't worry.
Okay. Here's my argument for fast fashion and fast trend cycles being positive, right? So fast fashion benefits marginalized communities that are traditionally ignored by the fashion industry, i.e. the economically disadvantaged and people who wear extended sizing.
Yep.
And in my opinion, it's not these communities' responsibilities to stop purchasing from fast fashion, to reverse the damage. Like, they are not the main culprits.
And then, I'm sorry, you just brought up a point in my mind, too. Mm-hmm. In my experience, especially when, you know, I was freshly immigrated into the United States, and we would have to look for, like, lower-priced things, even at that, my mother always knew how to find something that was quality within, like, the lower price, or even know how to extend it for longer.
I was about to say, because people who are a part of, like, lower income communities, fast fashion is not the first option. Fast fashion is, I need something, and I literally only have this $20. I need new clothes for school, for this, for work, or whatever. Like, because my mom, like, because we grew up in the P's, and so my mom is habitually penny pincher woman.
That's my mom too.
Literally has clothes from 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I keep
every garage sale, the closet, every thrift store.
Like, we don't need this. Like, thank God we're in a better situation.
You are a hoarder, lady.
Yeah,
yes. Like, but it's quality clothing.
Yeah.
Like, so I feel like, and first of all, we all know the economically disadvantaged are not the ones doing these insane haul videos or constantly uploading new content that involves purchasing or being sent
or buying something items. Just to donate 30 days later.
Exactly. So I don't feel like it's poor people's fault.
No,
fast fashion is not on the backs of poor people.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm aligned with the positive so far. Is there anywhere more positive that you want to highlight?
Also, for my fat babes, I feel very conflicted about this. I talk about this a lot because for my personal style, I try to avoid fast fashion. Mm-hmm. But when I see my plus size model mutuals or influencer mutuals talk about their desire to work with brands that don't have their sizing and talk about their desire to dress in a certain way or a certain aesthetic, and they just can't do that because their only options are Shein because the original company does not offer their size and refuses to extend sizes and comes up with a bunch of bullshit ass, oh, the factory is going to charge me more excuses. I can't look down on them. I can't feel like angry or disappointed in them that they're engaging that. Like, and for fast fashion, for plus size influencers, a lot of the times it's only the fast fashion companies that are giving them what they're worth in terms of compensation. Mm-hmm. So how could I be mad at that?
Right. Definitely can't be mad.
I'm sure they'd love to express themselves in other ways, but realistically that's not happening unless you're getting something custom made for you, which is wild expensive. So I do not think it's the fault of fat people or people who are extremely thin. Mm-hmm. So in those two cases, I do think there are some benefits of fast fashion.
I agree. Okay.
Yep. On both points, we're good?
Yep.
Okay. If you disagree with us,
let us know. But
argue in the comments.
Clearly you hate people, so
I don't really care, though, because I said what I see. But we cannot say all of this and kiki and laugh about the alleged positives without discussing the negatives, because Mother Nature is in danger.
Yeah.
And it is Miss Shein and other fast fashion companies' faults. Okay? I mean, we are not an encyclopedia or an official reference, but I will run down some stats for y'all. So the volume of clothing that Americans throw away each year has doubled from 7 million tons to 14 million tons in under 20 years since 2020. 14 million.
Since 2020?
Since 2020.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, I thought you were going to say, wait, let me say that phrase again so I can just process it, because I don't know. I thought you were going to say something else. But
the volume of clothing Americans throw away each year has doubled from 7 million tons to 14 million tons. So that's where the doubling comes in.
I can do math, yes.
In under 20 years.
Okay.
We're talking about a 20-year time frame.
Okay.
Since the year 2020. Since is the wrong word.
Okay, yeah, because I was about to say, because
2020 was the end point of this metric.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I think I paraphrased
that
wrong.
2000 to 2020,
yeah,
we doubled them out.
Yeah.
Okay,
from 7 million. No, you're right. The since got me, girl.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Miguel.
But yeah, I was like, what? But yeah, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. I mean, it's crazy, but I can see that.
Still, 14 million tons.
Yeah, that's still a lot of clothing.
Of textile waste. Also, in under 15 years, clothing production has doubled, with the average consumer buying 30% more clothing items a year. In 2019, 208 million pounds of waste were created by single-use outfits, so club attire, vacation attire, Shein attire. And the textile industry is the second largest polluter of the world, after the oil industry.
Man, that's crazy.
Mm-mm.
Who would have thought? I'm trying to think of like other things that I thought would have been higher than textile. Dang. Maybe like auto industry.
Manufacturing. Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy.
And all of the people who are benefiting this will be living on Mars while the Earth burns.
While we burning down here on Earth.
Ooh.
On the last train.
So pop quiz. Not really pop quiz. Kind of an open-ended question. Should consumers or retailers be held responsible for the environmental and economic impacts of fast fashion? If so, ethically or legally?
Good question. So the last part of your question changed my initial answer, because initially I was going to say that is on part of both people, because retailers are trying to appease to the consumer, because if they make clothes and nobody's buying it, they don't want that, because they care about profit margins or whatnot. And then in the same breath, retailers are also doing things like, you know, making sure that the algorithm is boosting their clothing so that consumers will want that, even though, you know, you might find a brand that is making the same thing but is more expensive, but because Shein can make
it cheaper.
We'll
get into that later.
Yeah, because Shein can make it cheaper. There's like, okay, that's gonna, you know, obviously drive the person to buy from Shein. But then you said, so I guess in a sense, morally, I feel as though the consumer should be
responsible,
held accountable. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, legally, I think that consumers, while they might not like get sued, I think that we should definitely be pushing or lobbying for laws to curtail like the amount of waste a company can create, or like the amount of textile they can use in a certain, because we're trying to limit it, or like, you know, I don't know like the specifics, but there should be definitely some type of form of legislation, and it shouldn't
extend
just be
a carbon tax like internationally for, you know,
yeah, and then the
countries.
International House of Fashion or like textile, I don't know which would have like a jurisdiction.
IHOP for fashion is the first thing, like International House of Pancakes, but for fashion.
But yeah, there should be like a committee or something that is overseeing all fashion globally, because
it should be a UN issue.
Yeah, because
honestly,
in the same sense that a government is trying to have like a global tax in terms of like 13% globally is the lowest that everybody can do, there should be like something that's dictating like globally, this is the max amount of fat, whatever. I don't know what the specifics would be,
like, but there's America has a carbon tax, I believe. America has a carbon tax on corporations, or one was proposed. I do know that to go back to the question, I totally agree with you, like morally and ethically, individual consumers need to be responsible for the choices they make. Unfortunately, I feel like it is going to take the entire like human collective to take a step away from the influence of social media in order for people to start thinking individually and not be so influenced by the stuff that is force-fed to us. And I feel like, will that happen possibly anytime soon? I don't think so.
And then too, the algorithm to be an influencer on social media, right? If you don't have money, you have to use your money wisely to buy and working.
Right.
Buy
the I wish influencing the business of influencing, it was headed towards uniqueness as opposed to quantity, quality over quantity.
Yeah.
How are you doing something? You know, how are you putting a twist on it? How are you using your materials? How are you using your resources? I think if influence heads in that direction, that will be a step in the right direction in terms of like us being a little bit more responsible for our actions in general. And legally, I definitely feel like, how is this not an issue that the UN is addressing? I might be speaking out of ignorance because they might be.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like, anyone who's taken a History 101 class knows that, like, the UN can only do so much in terms of, like, real impact. But I just feel like, not even to target China, because there's shitty manufacturing practices everywhere, there needs to be an international, like, carbon tax and regulation on child labor. I know there is international laws, but people don't abide to it. But like, we need to crack down on this, because like, something as frivolous as like getting a new outfit every 7 days has like its hands into child labor laws, the fucking earth burning, landfills and shit. And it's like, when are we gonna stop being so selfish?
Right.
Which is the overarching question, but exactly. You know.
So it's just like, I don't know, it's just everybody has a part to play, essentially, is the ultimate answer. So
yeah.
Definitely, it can't just be put on one or another person. But that's part of the reason why it's going, right? Because everybody's trying to put the blame on one another, but no real actions actually. Nobody's like, oh, I need to take advantage. There's no brand is saying, no, we need to set the standard that way. You know, because once, like, if a big name brand says, no, we're going to set the standard, people are going to start to follow. You know, it depends on who the right name is that starts it, unfortunately, because that's how influence works. But yeah, we just need to find that one brand or person to say, look, stop, the buck stops now. We need to be thinking about our future. We need to think about our kids. We need to think about their kids' kids. So, yeah.
Right. So, we definitely agree on the ethical and legal responsibilities of consumers and retailers. But now, we are going to bring it to the future. Actually, I'm lying. Not the future. We're going to bring it to last week. We're going to bring it back to New York Fashion Week. I don't know why I said the future. We're bringing it back to 1 week in the past, actually.
Yes.
Okay. So, in general, do you think that fast fashion trend cycles have impact on high-end designers when they're creating their collections?
I think ultimately the answer is no, but I do think there is some influence.
Okay.
To me. Obviously, and a good example of this is the Balenciaga and how they leaned into streetwear, right?
Because yes, absolutely.
Like streetwear necessarily is not fast fashion, but there are aspects of fashion that, because like I said, essentially every company is owned by LVMH. So on all they care about is appeasing their stockholders. And so all they care about is driving sales. And usually sales are like, what's going on? How many people can buy it? And
perfume,
whatnot.
Shoes, bags.
And so, and or how can we take a look that is inspired by the lower class, unfortunately, and make it high fashion so that, you know, the high fashion people could feel good about themselves being in more expensive wear when, you know, you can essentially have the same look with a, you know, unfortunately, like a boohoo or something, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that people were like, oh, from New York Fashion Week, I'm gonna present a look that's strictly inspired from like Shein and boohoos or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I do think that high fashion and luxury houses in themselves, in terms of their brands, are influenced by trying to appease people at a lower point.
Yeah.
Than, you know, just extremely high points.
I feel like, yeah. I think the emphasis on like the tangibles is different.
Mm.
So
what do you mean by tangibles?
Tangibles meaning bags, shoes, and perfumes. Like Alexander McQueen, God rest his soul, he has like this amazing quote. I'm gonna misquote it, but he essentially was saying that like he did not like the business of fashion because at the end of the day, it boils down to moving perfume bottles. Perfume fuels and funds all this shit. Mm. Everybody trying to get that, you know, that scent off because that's the most accessible item, cheapest to produce, bada bang, bada boom. So I do think with the shift in focus, we can see that reflected on the runway. Mm. But I also think like the in groups in the fashion industry and the tastemakers have shifted.
Mm.
So let me explain.
Yeah.
Before like social media, TikTok, influencer, Instagram culture, basically the common people only had fashion magazines and celebrities as examples of how to interpret and set trends that they saw on the runway.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that is a small, highly gatekept group of tastemakers who are all neatly curated. All of the presentations were really catered towards these people, and it really limited the public's exposure to input on potential trends and how to influence it. Basically, like, the circle was tight, trend circles. Basically, the circle was tight and trend cycles were slow. Now, anybody could be a trendsetter. Anyone could be the in group if you just believe in yourself and have 100,000 followers and are delusional. manifesting that for myself.
Manifesting that for us.
Seriously.
We need some delusion in our lives.
I'm already there on levels of delusion, but you know, there are hundreds of thousands of potential trendsetters who designers are trying to appease to, who can quickly reach and sell out their products, you know, because they have audiences of hundreds and millions of people. That's why you see TikTokers at the Met Gala. That's why you see TikTokers walking the red carpet, walking the runway. Dolce & Gabbana pulled that shit maybe like 2 years ago when like the majority of their cast for one of their shows was like Viners.
Can we take a quick, you brought up a something I just want to quickly speak on, right? So like initially when, you know, like everybody's talking about like, oh, we have TikTokers and like Met Galas and whatnot. One thing that, and at first I was part of the crowd like, oh, what the hell is going on? But
it makes
about,
sense.
But no, but thinking about it, what I want, I want that to break down barriers, but what I want are the like people who really put work into the TikTokers, not people, not real TikTokers,
not just
who are just there because
up,
they have a lot. Yeah,
let's just scoop up the top 10 biggest people who have the biggest platforms on TikTok. Invite them. It should be the biggest people who are related to our company and our product.
Exactly. That's absolutely. I was like, you know, that's what we need to be aiming for. Not absolutely. No Addison Rae, God forbid her soul. I mean, God,
well, she's an actress dead, now, so yeah. You know.
So that's what I just wanted to quickly say.
I totally agree. Influencers are socialites. Like, let's stop pretending and being shocked when they get invited to official industry things. Like, get over it, people. But yeah, so the tastemakers, the circle of tastemakers has expanded. It has included people who don't necessarily have any history or experience in the industry. So companies are scrambling to appease the people who can reach, obviously, audiences quicker and faster and who have shown that they are able to sell product for other brands and companies. So another question, and this is kind of a pop quiz. Did you notice any, what you would consider fast fashion trends at New York Fashion Week?
Not really, but I did, not necessarily trend, but I did notice like,
or clothes that you would consider like, oh, that's a fast fashion thing.
I noticed
social media inspired.
That, you know, you can't place to like, you don't really know where they got it from, but they made it pull off like it was high class.
Yeah.
You know, so certain stuff like that. I don't know if that, like, you know, that's probably been going on forever.
Yeah.
But I didn't quote unquote notice any fast fashion trends. How about you?
So I feel like I somewhat did. And this is going to cross into like one of my other favorite, like, social media terms is BBL fashion. which we are going to definitely do a whole series on BBL fashion, and I'm drafting an article about it already. I'm obsessed with the concept and the nuances, but slightly off topic.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of designers that put sex appeal first, particularly like youthful ones, get pegged as BBL fashion. So like Laquan Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Laquan Smith does design clothes for the Instagram socialite. That is his target audience.
But I thought that he was like one of the first like BBL fashion to me.
No. Trust me, when we do the history of hoe fashion is long and storied and is my favorite part of history ever. Yeah, he's not the first, he won't be the last. But designers like Laquan Smith and another one is Bronx and Barco is another high-end designer that often gets associated with BBL fashion because lots of cutouts, you know, very sexy, slinky, etc. I did notice that a lot at Fashion Week, not to the point where it was you know, like an issue, but it was noticeable to me. But I would like to play a clip from a TikToker. I will insert her name in post, but it was a really great summation of how people are feeling about New York Fashion Week and trend cycles. So
the power social media has to inform and dictate trends feels remarkably evident looking at New York Fashion Week. Like, these collections were planned and put into production give or take a year ago. And in that time span, some things like this kind of print, landscape knits, and crochet, I've heard people call all of these things chuggy on this app. It's genuinely frightening. Because the only real operation that can keep up with this ever-changing demand and acceptance and can churn out 100 new items from concept to production in 3 days are fast fashion brands. And I'll be honest, I was underwhelmed by a lot of these shows because I was craving innovation, and I don't know if brands are genuinely not being innovative or because I'm online and I've seen them before. I mean, 20, even 10 years ago, the runway massively aided direction in what brands would produce and what consumers would buy. But I almost feel a lot of that power has shifted to influencers and folks with taste-making status. It's kind of a trip and leaves me wondering, what is the future of runway? How will it impact fashion in the future? As a trend analyst and researcher who really just wants people to lean into their personal style, it's very distressing to think about.
So you just heard basically a summary of what we've been discussing by TikTok user Old Loser in Brooklyn. I love TikTok names so much.
Yeah,
basically what we've been saying, but in 3 minutes, super concise. Side note, TikTok is a black hole of like Shein and fashion over influencers and like, you know, transplants, but there are some really, really great trend analysis and personal style experts and industry people who are open, warm, communicative, break down things, super understandable. Definitely gonna put a list together soon because I learned so much on fashion TikTok. Okay, but yeah, I agree with her in terms of her analysis on why we feel unimpressed by things, but I do think she overlooked some collections that are really unique. Like, I'm not concerned about artistically the future of fashion. I think we're in good hands. I am concerned in terms of support, production, and the business aspect, if those bright ideas will be allowed to thrive in an environment that is so focused on profitability and therefore these trend cycles.
So yeah, that's a good point. I'm just trying to like process my thoughts on that because she made a good point in saying that, you know, what's going to be the point of runways essentially is what I ascertained from what she was saying
right.
in the future. If like people are going to be like, oh wait, these looks are old. I agree that, you know, maybe she didn't just focus on artists, fashion designers that are, you know, out there for real. And to a degree, it might be a good thing that, you know, that's going to accelerate designers who are really experimental, who are really thinking outside of the box, outside of like fashion trends. So that's a good thing that might. But in terms of the business of this, I think it's going to change the business model of fashion in the sense that at even less clothes now are going to be produced because they're not going to sell as much. They're going to be very, very like targeted at a certain crowd, which means a lot of people are going to be excluded. So essentially it's just like, to me, it just seems like if fashion is just going to become something that's just going to be expressive at least high fashion, I'm sorry, expressive for people who have the money to be expressive versus, you know, the people who will go to, what is it, Shein to buy the cheaper clothes or whatnot. Those are like my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't think it's like clipped for creativity as a whole. It's just, I don't know. I mean, as things get more accessible in the fast fashion lane, I think trying to find those unique and creative designers are going to be a lot harder. So, last pop question of the episode. Do you think the fast fashion cycle will be responsible for the downfall of high-end designers? In 30 seconds or less.
I'm trying to like really... I think that, yes, it's going to be the downfall of high fashion designers, but the positive of that is it's going to elevate mid-tier designers, right? Those are going to become the new...
Give me an example of a mid-tier designer.
I don't want to place anybody, but in the sense that they're going to be brands that, like, let's say... I don't know. It's just going to be like your smaller businesses that are going to be more people that are not your so like your what you call it? Your Shein.
Traditional houses, traditional fashion houses or fast fashion.
Yeah, it's going to be like more people that we're going to have a oversaturated market of
the fashion elitists are going to define their eliteness by patronizing younger and middle tier designers as opposed to like
the older
traditional Chanel's, Balenciaga's, Givenchy's.
Keep up to the younger or if they are, they're going to be poaching a lot of mid tier people. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. So I brought this up because there was a tweet. Not going to mention their name because they got rightfully dragged. Basically, the pictures are a picture of a Laquan Smith bodysuit and then a boutique copy of it. And the caption is, I brought the bodysuit on the left to only get on. Okay. Caption is, I bought the jumpsuit on the left only to get on IG and see it on an IG boutique on a page on the right. Sigh. Designer just isn't fun anymore. It'll be replicated tomorrow. And this person got ratioed, rightfully so, because they were complaining about a $800 Laquan Smith X Revolve bodysuit being sold in a boutique. And I just feel like this really defines the sentiment of the possible downfall of designers, because we are coming at this from a perspective, like a research perspective, so we understand what's happening in terms of trend cycles and shit, but most consumers aren't aware of that. So in the quotes, you see everything from, oh, look, the $800 one was from AliExpress and da 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 da. The quality the quality is the same. It doesn't matter. Give me the cheap one, da 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 da. My point being that I feel like people are going to back away from high end because people who are not invested in the art of fashion only like designer because it is inaccessible to others.
Yep.
Like if it was about the quality, like they would have mentioned that in the tweet, but you're upset because someone who only had $40 to spare is wearing the same outfit as you who had $800 to spare. So if we keep looking at fashion like this, I feel like it is clipped. Like it's over, like, it's going to be the death of ingenuity, because that means you're not going to be genuinely supporting these mid or small size designers either, because as soon as you put your attention to it, Shein is just going to run, make a copy, and then boom, that new designer is out too. And I feel like, yeah, we all had a great time making fun of this person, because it really was like just a wild ass, like, you're really mad about this cutout bodysuit. But I feel like it's a learning opportunity, and hopefully like sentiments will change, because like if someone wearing a designer dupe makes you not want to wear it anymore,
you didn't really want to wear it.
You never liked it in the first place, or you don't have the faith or imagination or creativity to style it in a different way. Because let's be honest, like, you bought that bodysuit and you were going to put on those Bottega strappy heels, and sister who paid $40 for it probably got her $20 fake Bottega heels from Shein, and she was going to wear it the same way as you. And that's why you're really mad.
Yeah.
But I feel like if people were smart, they would use opportunities like this to establish, okay, why am I buying clothes? How does something make me feel? When can I use this? Can I use it for more than one occasion? So ideally, people's mindsets will eventually start to shift. And then maybe we can get that type of cultural change that we were talking about before, so where people are accountable for their purchases and their consumption. But realistically, I don't have that much faith
in people. Another thing too is, this is like, essentially what you're saying is that like fashion itself is like an incubator. There's only a certain amount of people that are interested in the world of fashion,
yeah,
and what really are the quote-unquote rules of fashion, yeah, right?
Fashion as an art.
Majority of consumers in the world, all they care about is, okay, I'm buying this for an occasion. Was it going to cost me? Is it going to look good?
Yeah.
You know, they're not really thinking about, you know, the things that your mom taught you to think about. How long is it going to last? You know, how many uses can you get on it?
Yeah.
If you wash it, is it going to change the color? Is it going to fade?
Yeah.
So they don't appreciate, that's why things are more expensive, right? They just like, okay, it's expensive because of the designer. No, the expensive because the designer put the thought into the choice of fabric. You know, they have like 16 different swatches of the same color.
Because it might look the same, but I guarantee you, the $40 one is going to shrink up into a scarf, and the Laquan Smith one is going to last you a while.
Hopefully, that's, you know, we don't
hopefully
know
if, a while.
That's the way hopefully.
I'm pretty. I've heard his clothing. No,
that wasn't me a dig on it, but I'm just trying to say is because some people will mark
that's
up.
That's intent.
Yeah, some people, and that's another thing for a business brand, right? Some people mark up brands because they're like, oh, I just want to make a profit. But because
Chanel bags keep on getting more expensive, but the quality is decreasing.
Exactly. So is it really worth it? Like people, like that's why it's like you have
you
to make
start
that
asking these questions.
Exactly. It's not necessarily like, oh, it's worth more because it's Chanel. No.
Yeah.
It's Chanel using the fabrics that's going to actually last long, because prior they were doing that, but now, you know, to increase profits, they changed that fabric, but you didn't notice.
They got loose stitching
exactly on
the Chanel site. I'll never, another viral tweet. It was like a Chanel bag, the product photography from the website. You could literally see the loose stitching on the Chanel site. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's why if you ever see me in no Chanel or Birkin, do not ask me no questions. I am not rich. I bought it used because I want an old one,
because
I'm not buying no new retail shit for that type of money. I'm going to buy a used one from 10 years ago.
Exactly. So it's just those questions. And I'm just grateful I got the lessons in terms of like my mom was like, I remember buying shoes. Everybody went through this. That bought for three sizes ahead because you want it to last longer.
Oh yeah.
Right? So it's like you have
if you
to
had
think.
Siblings of the same gender as you, they'd hand me down clothing.
Yeah, I have clothes that whenever my mom's going back, I'm like, Jerry, do you have anything that you don't want anymore?
Always.
So I can give it away.
My mom does that with PR.
And it's not. It's just because that's what it is. It's about you want to think about you want to think about the life of clothes versus the usage of clothes. Like, how long is this gonna stay in my closet? Like, can I style this differently if trends are changing? Even if change it, do I feel comfortable wearing that same style because I liked it? Am I just buying it because of the trend? So these are questions.
Shout out to my mom, because I have a bunch of Gucci bags from the 80s that still look great.
So
shout out to your mama.
So all this stuff is just like, yes, it's more to fashion than this clothes. And it's,
we gotta be conscious of our decisions. Be responsible for our decisions, because the arm of the law is slow and ineffective. So legally,
and then too, I'm not even gonna like. I will say that sometimes I do buy things just to buy things, right? Not because I'm really
treat yourself
about
once
questions.
In a while.
Yeah, or or from an ASOS because I need it for like a event, like a vacation coming up. But I am trying to stay away from that because I do believe that I should take a moral obligation to, you know, think of other people outside of myself. If that means I have to spend more, that means I just have to make more money, you know, or have to like save up more instead of trying to quickly, because it's going to last longer versus having to quickly buy multiple things.
Right.
So, yeah.
So,
yeah, heavy sigh.
I feel like that was a pretty comprehensive overview of what I feel like that was a pretty comprehensive overview of what trend cycles and their relation to fast fashion was. And if you take anything away from this, it's just to think independently about your consumption, about what's necessary. Don't be afraid to treat yourself. If you are, try to look for things that are quality instead of buying a bunch of quantity.
Amen.
That's going to be a wrap on episode 16.
Oh. So, if you, I don't even remember how we wrapped up things. Yeah. I was just about to talk on my ass. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm just telling you.
Oof. If you enjoyed this episode, yeah, please leave a rating and review. And please, please, please do not forget to share this, even if you're just texting it to the group chat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your POVs, your shares is very, very important to us.
And don't forget
us.
To follow us on social media at Sample Size Media.
On everything.
On everything. That's
every
as
platform.
Easy as that. Yeah,
every YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter.
And then my personal IG is Tone Bone. There's a period in between tone and a B0NE. And it's the same on Twitter, but it's an underscore instead of a period to separate the tone and the bone. And then, yeah, you can find me on IG, Twitter, and TikTok.
And you can find me on all of those platforms at Yano, YEAHNOE, except on Twitter, there are two E's. So it's YEAHNOEE.
Yeah. Yeah. So, see you guys next time.
Remember, it's not that serious. It's just close.
Bye.